This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. Man, are you going to be glad that you are here today. Weldon Long has an amazing, inspirational story. If you have any doubt that mindset is the foundation of all the results you produce in life, I offer you Weldon Long as my complete and total refutation of that belief. While in his third term in a federal prison, his father said these words to him right before he passed away. As long as you're still breathing, you've got a shot. Weldon went on to pick up a few key books, and he infected himself with a whole new belief system. That belief system allowed him to build a multi-million dollar business, a couple of them, in fact, and to succeed beyond anyone's imagination except his own. Here's Weldon Long.
Hey, Weldon, how are you?
I'm doing great, Anthony. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for joining me here.
Man, it's a pleasure to be with you.
We're audio only, but I can see you, and you've got a wonderful hairstyle. It's very attractive. You're an attractive man.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I've been told I have a face for radio.
Well, we both do in this case. Well, I want to start off, and I think I know who you are, and I read your first book. You sent it to me, and it was a great, great book with such a great story. For the people that don't know you and aren't aware of who you are, would you mind going through that story with us and tell us how you got here? And I want to weave this into explaining some of what's in your new book about mindset, particularly. I don't know where you want to start, but if you could just pick up at the beginning of wherever you're comfortable.
Well, I think, kind of the 25-cent version of it, starting in 1987, from 1987 when I was 23 years old, going through 2003 over that 15-year span, I spent 13 of those years in prison behind bars on three different trips. I went to prison the first time in 1987, for about 4 years. I got out, made it for a couple of years, but still had the same mindset, kind of thinking like a convict, acting like a convict, and getting what convicts get, which was a trip back to the joint about 2 years later. So I went back for about another 2 years on parole violations and gun charges, got out again. Second time, same problem, still thinking like a convict, acting like a convict, and getting what convicts get, and went back to prison again about 18 months after that. And when I was back in that third time, which started in 1996, I had already done about 6.5 years on those first two trips. On June 10th of 1996, I was in federal prison, starting a 7-year sentence, and received the news that my father died. And when I received the news that my father died, the realization that he went to his grave knowing me as a thief and a crook and a liar and a scumbag really just hit me hard. By that time, I had a son who was 3 years old that I had fathered on one of my trips out on parole. And so I had this 3-year-old son that I'd abandoned. And I got my father, you know, who's passed away. And I'm kind of the generation stuck in the middle and decided I had to make a change. I started thinking about the last time I talked to my father. It was 2 weeks before he passed away. And we were on the phone. I was in prison, of course, calling on a Sunday afternoon, as I often did. And my dad says to me, he says, you know, son, things could be worse for you. And I said, Dad, how did you figure? I got a 9th grade education. I'm a 3-time loser, convicted felon, never had a job, never had a home, 32 years old, not getting out this time till I'm 40. How in the world could my life be any worse? My dad says to me, he said, son, you're still breathing. And as long as you're breathing, you got a shot. And we said our goodbyes and hung up. And that was the last time I ever talked to my dad. So 2 weeks later, he was gone. And I realized, thinking back to that conversation, that the nicest thing my father could say to me on his deathbed was, at least you're breathing. And I realized what a pathetic human being and just a pathetic loser I was in my father's eyes. And so that's where it all started, really, the change, at least. In June of 1996, I decided I was going to change the course of my destiny, and that's exactly what I did.
That's in the first book. What's the name? The Upside of Fear?
The Upside of Fear is the first book. Yeah, that's the personal story, the memoir. It was selected by Writer's Digest as best self-published book of the year 2 years ago, New York Book Festival Best Autobiography, and I actually just released it through Random House in Korea about a year ago. So it's been amazing to me. My simple little story has, you know, touched people on a pretty deep level.
And and you can call it a simple little story, but it's and I remember emailing back and forth with you when it first came out, and you sent it to me, and I promoted it on the blog. It's a great book. You did a wonderful job writing the book, but even more than that, the way that you told the story, I mean, you've now you're way past this, so a lot of the drama's dropped out. But you were in prison. I mean, what that's got to be the most horrific, scary thing ever. And then you're back, and you're back this third time. And you make this dramatic change. What entered into your mind that third time back? And I know part of it was just the words that your father spoke to you. But what snapped? Because we'll talk about this now. Your life changed dramatically when you got out. But what snapped in prison? Because you started to make the change then.
Yeah, what really snapped, Anthony, was a realization that I am responsible. For a lot of years of my life, up to the time I was 32, when this happened in 1996, my dad died, I was 32. You know, it was always the snitch's fault, the ex-wife's fault, the prosecutor's fault, the cop's fault, whatever. And I never looked inside to address the problem. And so it was really came kind of a sense of self-reliance and personal responsibility. The first book I picked up, it's kind of interesting. After my dad died and I said, okay, I'm going to make this change. I went to I was in a temporary housing facility in Las Vegas, Nevada. Although I was there 18 months, it was classified a temporary facility. So we didn't have all the normal prison luxuries of a library and a yard and that kind of stuff. And our library was an old cardboard box that people would bring donated books in. The cops would bring them in and donate them. And I started going to that box, and this right after my father died, and I picked up a copy of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And that book began really to be my roadmap. And not knowing that, you know, 15 years later I would write my own book and Dr. Covey would endorse it. He actually endorsed his second book as well just before he passed away. Had a chance to work with him and speak with him. And ironically, when he endorsed The Upside of Fear, the first book, that was on June 10th of 2009, 13 years to the day my father died on June 10th of 1996. And so I had a very special relationship with him, and that book really served as my roadmap. And that's where I began the whole understanding the sense of personal responsibility, really.
I have to read that book every 2 years.
It'd be great.
And it's like, it's like it's brand new again, and I'm thinking, I should know this. I've read this book every 2 years. Would you describe the mentality that you had when you were young and you were living this criminal life as a victim? I mean, you were the victim of a system, and that's sort of the way out of being responsible is to say it's not me, it's everybody else.
Absolutely. I think for some reason, and I don't know exactly. I was the youngest of five kids, and my siblings were all pretty normal and hardworking and things. And but somewhere along the way, I got this sense of entitlement that I was entitled to the house in the suburbs and the car, the whatever. But I wasn't willing to pay the price on education, work, any of those things. And so, yeah, then when you begin to spiral out of control the way I did, it is about blaming other people and just, you know, bad luck. And, you know, if I had an education, if I had this, I had that. And the reality is what I learned through that process is that, and this is what, you know, Covey talks about so much in Seven Habits, that our life is a reflection of our responses. You know, and so whatever situation you're in, I mean, you've had very difficult situations in your life that you've written about. And, you know, I mean, you can decide to go either way with that stuff. And then so my situation is like, OK, this is the stimulus I have is a 3-time loser high school dropout. That's what I got to work with. What am I going to do about it? And I began to make better decisions and as a result, better results. You know,
what else did you read in prison?
That book was the first one. I remember shortly thereafter reading one of Napoleon Hill's book. It wasn't Think and Grow Rich, though. It was a book called You Can Create Your Own Miracles. And later on, I found a copy of Think and Grow Rich, began to read Wayne Dyer, read a couple of his books about visualization and creative visualization. After about a year of being in that facility, a year and a half, I was transferred to a regular federal prison in Florence, Colorado. And in the library, they had, a copy of the Tony Robbins Personal Power Program, the 30-day program he used to sell late at night on television. They had a copy of it there on these cassettes, you know, and a little player. I'd put it in there every day. I'd go in the library and listen to that hour for that day, and then I'd begin to practice those things. And I just began to see this thread through all this stuff about making good decisions and being responsible. It's all the same message, and just began to implement it. I made a list. of everything I what a perfect life for me would look like. You know, a great relationship with my son, homes, job, career, different things. And I wrote it on a sheet of paper. I stuck it to my cell wall with toothpaste. And that became kind of my guiding constitution. I began to live by that, you know, that constitution. And little by little, those things all begin to manifest.
I can't help but smile, though. It's so much what you put into your mind is what comes out of you. And if you pour good stuff in all the time, good stuff eventually starts to come out. And if you pour bad stuff in all the time, then bad stuff always comes out. And you're in prison, I think. So you're surrounded by people who had the same mindset that you had when you came in at that time, and they're not doing anything. And many, most of them are probably not doing anything to pour that much good stuff into their mind. What was that like being in that environment when now you've got a very different lens on the world than you had when you came in, but you're surrounded by people that didn't adopt your lens, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And not only did they not adopt my lens, they didn't think it was very cool that I was, you know, they looked at I was trying to be, you know, be like the man and be uppity or whatever. And I can remember having very serious conversations with some of the guys. I said, listen, I'm just tired of this. I got a son out there. I just can't do this anymore. You know, it's the old Tony Robbins thing. When the pain of changing becomes less than the pain of not changing, then we start changing. And that's what I did. And but there were a couple of guys that I found that were in similar type situations that were trying to make it better for themselves. So that kind of becomes your clique. And, you know, you try to avoid the brain damage. You just keep your head. You know, you don't look to the right, you don't look to the left, just keep, you know, keep your head physically and literally, you know, or figuratively and literally, just keep your head, you know, straight and stay focused on what's going on. Stay out of all the games, the drugs, the gambling, that kind of stuff. And that's what I did for the next 7 years. I walked out of the penitentiary in January 2003, just 10 years ago, to a homeless shelter. And but over those last 7 years, I was able to earn a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in business. With help of family through a school in California. And I had this whole new mindset by that time. You know, I read all the great writers and thinkers about these things. I walked out to a homeless shelter, and within 5 years, the first company I started was a little heating and air conditioning company, which I knew nothing about. But what I knew is that nothing happens until something gets sold. So I focused on becoming an expert on lead generation and sales in that industry, went out and hired the operations people, the technical experts, to do the installations and service the units and that kind of thing, and grew that business from $0 to $20 million in 5 years. In fact, in 2009, that little air conditioning company was selected by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies, small companies in America.
It's impossible, Weldon. It's impossible. You went to prison. You were there three times.
Yeah.
You had every bad strike against you that you could have. You can't come out and have that level of success. But then you did.
Yeah. I tell people, listen, I had a better chance of getting struck by lightning, hit by a truck, and winning the lottery on the same day than any of the things happening. But I stayed focused. And it really is about what you said, Anthony, about you know, filling the mind with the right things. And when this new book, The Power of Consistency, I begin with a quote, you know, that we become what we think about all day long, a famous Emerson quote. And the metaphor that I use is that imagine if I had a box right here in front of me, a big crate, and it was a motorcycle parts, components of a motorcycle in that box. If I remove the components piece by piece, component by component, and assemble them, when I'm done and I look up to, you know, admire my mechanical creation, what are the odds I would look up to realize I accidentally baked a cake? It couldn't happen, right? If it's a motorcycle in the box, it's the components of a motorcycle. When I empty the box and put the pieces together, it's still going to be a motorcycle. It may look different because it's assembled, but it's the same thing, right? So that box, I believe, is a metaphor for our minds. And we've all got stuff in there, you know, junk in our trunk or positive stuff or whatever it is. And through the course of our lives, for better or for worse, through our decisions, choices, attitudes, and beliefs, we begin to remove the components of that box. Eventually, the box is empty, the end of a career, the end of a life, end of whatever it is. And when you step up to it, look back and look back at your creation, it's going to be a perfect reflection of whatever was in the box. So the key is, I say, think inside the box. You know, Socrates said an unexamined life is not worth living. So look inside the box again being a metaphor for the mind. See what's in there. If you like what's in there, you're great. But if you see some stuff you don't like, limiting beliefs or negative attitudes, whatever, you know, we have the ability, in fact, the responsibility to remove those contents and put new things in there like you're talking about. And then over the course of our life, we reach in that box, we start pulling out better things. Whatever's in the box comes out. So to me, if you want something great, put it in the box, go out and begin to act consistently with that, and eventually those things come out of the box.
That's such a tough thing to do. You have to think about what you think about. Absolutely. And so much of that's going on without our having any natural control over it. The thought pops in and we hang on to that thought. And so we end up with fear and scarcity and all these bad ideas that come into our minds. It's like an infection, I think. I want to talk more about consistency because I think you and I share a premise. And I just got the book. It's out now, and I know it's doing well. We can talk about that. But I think this one idea that I picked up from leafing through the book before we had this conversation, I see so many people, and they're failing to produce as much as they could, not because they don't know enough, not because they're not smart enough, but it's because something else. What is that?
Well, really, what I always say is that, you know, success is not a knowledge problem. It's an implementation problem, a consistency problem. Most people, and I know you work with the same types of clients that I do, if you were to sit down with executives, sales professionals, business people, whatever, and said, you know, do you know what you want in life? They'd say, yeah, I got a pretty good idea what I want in life. And you'd say, well, so, you know, do you know what you need to do to get there? Well, yeah, Anthony, I know what I need to do to get there. And if you ask them, well, why aren't you doing it? They'd say, I don't know. And that's what I call the conundrum of human nature, knowing exactly what you want in life, knowing what you need to do to get it, and then not doing it. And the metaphor I often use is, you know, we've known smoking's bad for our health, you know, for a long, long time. A lot of people still smoke. So why would people smoke if they know it's dangerous? Well, because smoking won't kill you today, right? So what that really reveals in my estimation is that when the consequence, good or bad, of an action is not immediately apparent, we don't put a lot of stock into it, right? I ask clients all the time, if somebody walked into your office on December 31st, take a small business owner, and you had $200,000 in a briefcase, and your best customer walked in and said, hey, can I have that 200 grand? You'd say, well, of course not. You know, you'd make the right decision because it's a huge decision. It's everything you worked for that year. But if 400 customers come to you over the course of the year and ask for a $500 discount, we often say, yes, it's the same 200 grand. But because it's seemingly insignificant, we don't put as much stock into it. So the power of consistency really stands to the proposition of figuring out what you want. What are the little things that if we did over and over and over would help us get there? Not the big, huge things, but kind of that Pareto principle. The 80% of the results come from 20% of the activities. Focus on the 20% that deliver the biggest results, and then do those, execute those over and over and over. Jim Rohn used to say that success in life is doing the ordinary things extraordinarily well. And that's really what this is. It's identifying one or two little things in a sales career, a business career, whatever, and just focus on those and execute on those consistently, and the results are really a matter of time.
It's funny. You talked about smoking won't kill you today, and not prospecting won't kill you today either, right. but it will kill you.
Exactly, eventually.
Eventually, it's going to catch up.
Yeah, those little discounts, that failure to prospect today, all those little things, eventually they will get you.
How's the book doing?
It's doing wonderfully. I appreciate you asking. We last week when it first came out, we hit number one on Amazon in the sales category, the motivation category, human resource management. I just got the Wall Street Journal this morning. We were on the weekend edition. We were number two on hardcover business books in the Wall Street Journal this week. We hit number five on the New York Times list overall. We hit number one for a couple of days on Barnes & Noble. And we made, I'm not sure what number, the USA Today, but I know we made the USA list last week as well. So it's been amazing. I was just looking this morning. The Kindle version is really rocking too. The Kindle version, we were number 12 in the sales category on the Kindle version this morning. So it's been doing great. It's been pretty amazing. It's a very simple book. It in fact, I just got an email from a guy or a message on Facebook and actually in the United Kingdom. And he said, I'm reading all these books and all the science and all the, you know, philosophy behind all this positive thinking stuff. And he goes, none of it makes sense, but this whole box thing just makes sense. It's so simple. And that's really the highest compliment that I get from people when I'm speaking or when I'm writing, is that it takes a lot of this stuff and simplifies it down. Kind of like you said, you know, it's, you know, what goes in comes out. And it's that very simple concept that people can get their minds around.
It's actionable.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about mindset. What do you want to share about mindset in the book? And I know that's where you start. I guess I want to ask you two things about the book. I know you start with mindset, and I know at some point you get to the emotional connection to this. If I could get you to talk to both of those, that'd be great.
Yeah. You know, as you know, and as a lot of people know, to be successful in sales and business, you got to have the sales process, the sales system, but you also have to have the right mindset to kind of complement it. The best sales process in the world won't help you if you, when you're sitting across from a prospect and they start telling you they need a cheaper price or they need, you know, competitive bids, and you start getting overwhelmed and fearful of that, the great sales system isn't going to help you. That's why we have to first have the prosperity mindset, a mindset that is geared and programmed and dialed in to thrive in the face of challenges and adversity. Because if we're waiting for the economy to get better, we might be waiting a while, right? And then there are some signs of improvement for sure. But yesterday's job numbers, I mean, you know, just were a little bit overwhelming for people in a very negative way. So, if we're waiting for external conditions to get better before we're successful in sales, we might be waiting for a while. Success in sales, your story is a good example that you're not successful because you had a brain injury. You're successful because of what you did in response to that. You know, we have to learn to thrive in the face of those challenges. As you were talking about earlier before we began this interview, about not just coming back from a setback, but coming back twice as good from that, you know, and it's a very powerful concept that you were talking about. So the mindset really is about creating the mindset that's geared and programmed to overcome and to thrive in the face of challenges. It's an acronym based on fear, focus, emotional commitment, action, and responsibility. The focus part of it is really figuring out what you want. What do I want in life? You know, what do I need to do to get there? The emotional commitment part is really where we begin to program that into our subconscious mind. I recently did a project with Tom Hopkins and Mark Victor Hansen for the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And we were discussing these concepts that Napoleon Hill wrote about 100 years ago. They're still relevant, you know. And Napoleon Hill, in the beginning of Think and Grow Rich, talks about you got to have a definite purpose and you got to have, you know, that burning desire. You know, are those things still are important today? And the net result of the, you know, Napoleon Hill Foundation's research is absolutely just as important today. But the key is, how do you get that? How do you get that burning desire? Well, that's through the emotional commitment stage, which is really about writing out what we want in life, writing out what we need to do, reviewing on a daily basis, what I call a quiet time ritual, taking a few minutes every single day and reviewing that list and getting deeply emotionally committed to, you know, achieving the things on that list. And really, you know, Napoleon Hill wrote about this 100 years ago, that you can imagine an outcome and actually experience the emotion of achieving it, you know, the good feelings, before you actually have it. And that's necessary because if you think about, like, for example, a memory, if you think back to a memory from when you're 10 years old, most of us can recall some of those memories very quickly. And typically that memory, we tend to have some strong emotional connection, very happy, very sad, because we remember things that go into our subconscious mind when they're combined with a powerful emotion. So I believe the same thing is true with goal achievement, you know, whether it's a financial goal, personal goal, whatever, get deeply emotionally committed to it. And I can remember, you know, I had that list on my wall in my cell, and the first thing on that list was, I'm an awesome father to my son. Now, at the time, my son was 3 years old, and I was in prison and abandoned him. He was 10 years old the time I got out. But I got him when he was 10, and I raised him. He's 20 today. And I remember taking him off to college 2 years ago. And, of course, many years after I'd been out and built successful companies and different things, and I was dropping him off at college and had this real emotional experience. I'm hugging him, and we're out in front of his dormitory, and I'm just so proud of him. And, you know, at one point in the conversation, I put my hands on his shoulder. I said, son, I'm so proud of the man you became. And my son looks at me and puts his hands on my shoulder. He said, no, Dad, I'm proud of the man you became. And I began to cry in that moment. And I, sitting there in front of this dormitory out in front of all these people, I'm crying with my son. And I realized that it felt just as powerful that day. It felt just the same as I had 15 years earlier when I pretended it in the cell. And I tell people that's how deeply emotionally committed you have to get to your dreams, that but when you're experiencing it, you got to get so connected to it that when it actually happens, it feels about the same as it did when you pretended. You got to get that deeply emotionally committed. It's a critical part of the process.
Amazing. I love that story, too. It's an amazing story. The book is called The Power of Consistency. You can get it. I know you can get it at Barnes & Noble because I just did. So I know it's there. You can definitely get it on Amazon. Yep. Where do people go to find you, Weldon? Where do you want to point them to?
Really, the best place is probably the website, weldonlong.com. They can also go to freesalescoaching.com. We still have an offer up there. If you buy the book through us, it's actually a little more expensive than Amazon. But if you buy it through us, I do a weekly live coaching program on what we call Prosperity TV. I built a studio a couple of years ago, and it looks like ESPN. It's a beautiful studio. We do sales coaching live every Monday morning, and then, of course, it's available on demand as well. But it's an interactive TV show that we, you know, live streaming. So we're giving people a one-year subscription to that. Normally costs about $700 a year to subscribe to that program, that weekly coaching. we're giving it to people right now. If they go to the website and order the book, they can go to freesalescoaching.com. And there's a video that explains how the whole offer works.
That's awesome. I'm only going to put the link up in the show notes for that offer. That's it. They should absolutely go buy The Power of Consistency, but I would say they should buy The Upside of Fear, too. It's a great book. It's a great story, and I think people will get a lot out of reading that story. I appreciate you being here and sharing your story with us, and we'll do this again in the future.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Nice to talk with you.
That was everything I promised it would be and more, wasn't it? You can find Weldon at weldonlong.com or freesalescoaching.com to pick up his new book, The Power of Consistency. Do connect with him there. He's absolutely worth your time and attention. You can find me at thesalesblog.com. And when you get there, make sure you sign up for my newsletter. It's the very best content I create each week. And until next week, I'll see you right back here in the arena.